And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
As we await the results from the New Hampshire primary, everybody's talking about change. Obama framed it, Clinton stepped in, Huckabee can't help but be, Ron Paul has been for years, and Mitt Romney tried it on like a new glove. It's a good thing, change, because we need a new course. Change is being felt in many sectors, and a most encouraging area is within the faith-based communities. Today, we talk with someone who is working to inspire and implement change in the relationship that people of faith have with God's creation. That, and the Archbishop of Canterbury addresses the Bali Conference when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
2008 promises to be a year of change, and not a bit too soon. And I get the sense that this time, the desire for change will prevail into a new direction. But time will tell. Today we're going to hear from two advocates from the faith-based community. We open with a message from the Archbishop of Canterbury to the Bali Conference on Climate Change. We bring you his message during the weekly Earth Summit, which will begin in just a moment. In segment two, we head on over to the nation's capital, where Ben Campbell directs the faith-based initiative for Conservation International, which works around the world to restore and develop sustainable systems in some of the Earth's most critical concentrations of concern. Let's kick off this new year with a special message from the weekly Earth Summit. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith, and each week we meet here to hear recent speeches, reports, and commentary from around the world on the future of life on Earth. Today, we feature a message from Archbishop Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who gave this message to the recent Bali Climate Conference. So now, the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Greetings to all the delegates meeting in Bali, and especially to members of local Christian churches. It's a great privilege to be able to address you on this occasion, this very significant occasion, in our thinking and planning about the future of this planet. People sometimes ask why religious communities should be interested in issues around climate change and the environment. And I want to begin by saying a few words about the very character of Christian ethics and morality itself. For Christians, what's good is the kind of action that allows the style and nature of God's own being, God's own activity, to come through. And God, we're told, looks at the world and sees it as good. He doesn't see it as something that is useful for him. He sees it as something to rejoice in. And when human beings are able to relate to their material environment in that way, they are echoing the way in which God himself relates to creation. The more we see the created order simply in relation to our own wants, our own needs, let alone our own greed and acquisitiveness, the further away we are from God. And that's why in the Christian Church, the sacraments show us a material world used by and for God. The things of this world used as signs of love, not as signs of power, as signs of control, as signs of separation. In thinking about any environmental issue, then, from a Christian point of view, we'll be looking for those kinds of activity that reflect the nature of God, that reflect that possibility of a joyful appreciation of nature for what it is. But that, of course, is only part of the story. Christian ethics is also fundamentally about justice. It's about the way in which the love and the mercy of God, the gift of God, is spread abroad for all to share. And those kinds of actions which accumulate, which hoard up bits of the world so as to protect us from one another as human beings, those kinds of activity which privilege the interests of one group over another, those are the activities that God judges. So what we have to ask in our present situation is, what are those actions that God's justice passes sentence upon? Now, when we begin to think about the justice of God and how we are to do justice in relationship to our environment, two major considerations come up at once. The first is that the justice of God is a timeless thing. God is not more interested in the past than in the future, not more interested in the future than in the present. God's love and gift is there for all. And that means that it's possible for us to act unjustly in relation to future generations, to privilege our own interests and concerns over those of our children and grandchildren. The crisis that is threatened by climate change at the moment is a crisis of that kind. We are being shown, more clearly perhaps than we could have imagined 10 or 20 years ago, we are being shown how easy it is to be unjust, unfair to our children and grandchildren. To adopt an attitude and a policy towards our material world at this present moment, which in effect says, what really matters is what we need now, and not at all what is needed by future generations. We are depriving our children and our grandchildren of a world, and that is nothing if not unjust. So in that very broad and general way, we can talk about climate change as an issue that impels us to think about God's justice and how we are to echo it in our world. You're meeting in a part of the world where this is no academic issue, where rising water levels are already threatening livelihoods and lives themselves. We're looking at a future in 10, 20 years where this issue of rising water levels will more and more be a question of survival in many of the poorer areas of the world. In relation to that, though, there's yet another question about how the policies we adopt in order to control and limit the evil effects of climate change themselves can be seen as bearing most heavily on those least able to deal with them. How, in fact, they can be part of a continuing spiral driving people downwards further into poverty. The biggest challenge that faces us in terms of global policy at the moment is how we are to find ways of reducing and controlling climate change without eating into the economic aspirations, the proper aspirations of our poorer societies towards prosperity, respect, and dignity. The whole issue of how we approach carbon trading, the set of issues around contraction and convergence and agendas like that, these are issues that have to be thought through very carefully in terms of how the results of policies seeking to control climate change can at the same time work for the good, for the benefit of the neediest of our societies. It's a complex challenge, admittedly, but it's one that urgently needs addressing if we're not to face a continuing future of deep suspicion between societies in our world, between the less prosperous and the more prosperous. If we're to avoid the accusation, sadly well-founded at times, that climate change and related environmental issues are a luxury for the wealthier nations to be preoccupied about, while they fail to address the urgent questions of economic development for the poor. Those gathered at Bali, and especially those who gather with strong ethical and religious commitments, will, I believe, want to hold together these issues. Ultimately, the control of climate change, ultimately, the welfare of the environment, is an issue of survival for everybody. It's not a question that can be addressed by one society alone, by one religious tradition alone, by one state alone. It's something that demands collaboration. But collaboration will only happen effectively when people trust one another to be working for each other's interests in the fullest and clearest way possible. So the challenge that faith communities in particular face at the moment is the challenge of holding up before our governments and our societies a clear moral vision. First of all, a moral vision which insists that we do justice to future generations. Secondly, a moral vision which insists that we do justice to all our fellow human beings on the globe at the moment. That we do justice by seeking welfare, peace and stability for poorer societies at the same time as we seek to control the great dangers that surround us environmentally. And because this will mean real challenges to developed and prosperous societies, real challenges to let go of some of their security and some of their prosperity, we should be under no illusion that this will be an easy task. We have to persuade people, and of course we have to persuade ourselves, that sacrifice is necessary and important, and at the end of the day, life-giving. And that surely is one of the perspectives that religious commitment can bring. Christianity talks about letting go of our lives in order to save them. And letting go of some of our obsession about security, prosperity, and success, in order that the whole world may live, in order that the whole human family may live and flourish, that is something which Christians ought to be underlining as strongly as they possibly can. So let me end by wishing every blessing and success to those involved in this meeting. When we meet to discuss these matters, we are reminded that we do have choices, that we can make a difference. I'm delighted to know that other faith leaders are stepping up to speak on this issue. I'm delighted to know that so many people want to be part of the decision-making of our governments on this crucial matter. So God bless and sustain you in that task.
Thank you, Archbishop Williams. We live in what just may be the beginning of a new world in which we all share the wisdom that life matters. Join us next week when we bring you the most important 15 minutes on Earth, the weekly Earth Summit. And now it's time to bring you up to date on the breaking nature news from around the nation and around the world. So now, the news. Unusual weather patterns continue as a series of storms rip across portions of the nation. Northern California was hit by severe rains and high winds that resulted in hundreds of thousands of Northern California residents left without power. As the severe weather reached into the Sierras, it dumped as much as 11 feet of snow on Kerwood, California, and tore down power lines for 500 miles. The unusual weather also was responsible for the breach of the Truckee Canal levee, which gave way to the ravaging waters produced by the storm. The town of Fernley, Nevada, was hit by massive flooding of up to 8 feet. Moving east, the specter of out-of-season weather phenomenon continues this winter as an unusual outbreak of tornadoes touched down in communities throughout Missouri, Wisconsin, and Illinois. The rash of tornadoes left many homes destroyed, cars thrown about, and derailed a locomotive and 12 freight cars. Throughout the region, residents are on guard against the specter of toxic spills and dangerous chemical contamination resulting from the spills. Residents in the east are experiencing unusually warm temperatures for early January, with highs in the 60s and above in much of the eastern states. In England, a decision is expected today on whether a new phase of nuclear power plants will be approved. Prime Minister Gordon Brown's spokesman announced, "It is expected that the plans for nuclear power expansion will be approved." The decision is riddled with controversy, as it would likely require a general rate hike to underwrite the massive investment in the new plants, which will not produce power until the year 2017. The British decision will be closely watched by other governments, many of which increasingly view nuclear power as an essential part of the energy mix into the future. Nuclear power does have the advantage that it does not emit carbon as a direct result of the production of energy. However, issues of the limited resources, the expanding mining, the disposal of nuclear waste, the level of investment and time frame from initiation to getting online do provide alternative views on its practicality. The Goodyear blimp may have about 8 years of flying left. Relying on helium to keep it afloat, it and all other industries which rely on helium may find the sources gone from planet Earth within the next 8 years. As with all elements, helium is a limited resource on the planet. It cannot be created. Once it is gone forever. Helium is used in many industrial processes and is particularly critical in superfreezing applications, which can include cooling in nuclear power plants and in research. The closest large-scale source of helium is located on the Sun. At this time, no plans are being made to make mining forays to old Helios. One of the newest technologies is application of old applications to our world. Recently, it was reported that ocean-going cargo vessels are being assisted by massive kites that help pull the ships across the oceans, cutting fuel consumption by 20%. Now we are hearing that Indian car company Tata will be introducing a unique air-powered car that runs on compressed air and emits zero pollutants. The car will be powered by an engine that runs from compressed air tanks, similar to those used in scuba diving. Designed by Frenchman Guy Negre, the former Formula One motor racing engineer's invention depends on pressurized air to move the pistons, which in turn help to compress the air again in a reservoir. The engine also has an electric motor, which needs to be periodically recharged to top up the air pressure. The car will travel at speeds of up to 93 miles per hour. Anyone who still believes that the clean tech revolution will not be able to develop fast enough to meet our needs for transference to renewable sources needs to have the air in their tires checked. And that's the news. We're making progress in a year of change. When we return, we head on out to the nation's capital to hear what Conservation International is doing to collaborate their efforts at saving and restoring the natural balance as they join hands with the poor and threatened to unite in faith to save the earth. Stay tuned.
Peace, peace, peace. I can hear the bugles sounding, roaming around my land, my city and my town. Voices ringing louder while my bugle calls for peace.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.